Welcome to Parshas HaShavua Rabbeinu B'Chaye, Parshas Chaye Sara. Wanted to start with the Rabbeinu B'Chaye's Hakdama, his introduction to Parshas Chaye Sara. Again, we mentioned that one of the sort of unique things about the Rabbeinu B'Chaye's commentary in the Parshas HaShavua is that he starts off every Parsha with a pasuk from Mishlei, explains it, and then ties it into the Parshas HaShavua. And we mentioned that this is part of the Derech HaMusar, that Rabbeinu B'Chaye, again, as we saw in our first year, has various different approaches to try to explain the Psukim, and one of them is to try to take the Musar, the ethical teachings, the self-improvement teachings, out of the Parshas HaShavua. So here, at the beginning of Parshas Chayesar, he quotes the pasuk from Mishlei Perek Tesvav, Arach Chayim, Lemaila Lemaskil, Leman Sur, Mishaol Mata. Read you the art school translation of that, and then we'll talk about on a deeper level what the pasuk means. Art school translates, a path of life waits above for the intelligent one, so that his soul will turn away from the grave below. What does that mean? Shlomo Alav Hashalom Hodianu Bekan Ki Amaskil Amakir Kunas HaOlam Hazeh Shu Olam HaHefsed Hu Yodeya Ora Chayim Lemalo. The first thing we need to know in order to understand this pasuk, says Rabbeinu B'Chaye, is just simply where to put the comma. Right? Ora Chayim Lemalo Lemaskil. Right? So the way our school translates it is that a path of life waits above for the intelligent one, right? Which seems to punctuate the pasuk as Orach Chayim, the path of life is kama lemalo, above for the maskil, for the person who is intelligent, right? Rashi also, in his commentary to Mishlei, seems to put the kama in that place. Rashi says the word lemalo is not above, but in front of. And he quotes the pasuk in Yeshaya, Srafim omdim mima'al lo, that the Srafim, the angels, were standing mima'al of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rashi says mima'al over there doesn't mean above. Who can stand above God? Srafim omdim mima'al lo means in front of someone, right? In other words, when you're facing forward, up, can be described as what's in front. So Arach Chaim, says Rashi, that the way of life is lemalo mit lemaskil. Someone who's intelligent has the path of life in front of him. The Rabbeinu B'Chaye, following many other mefarshim on that pasuk, puts the comma in a different place. He says, Arach Chaim lemalo. If you're a maskil, if you're an intelligent person, you know that the Arach Chaim, the true path of life, is not what's involved in this world. The real life is not in this world. But hu yodea ora chayim lemalo ba'olam ha'elyon hanitzchi. He knows that the true path of life is lemalo, is what a person is going to be involved in after 120 years, after he departs from this world, after, he's in the olam ha'emes. Right? What he does in this world is simply a preparation for that ultimate world. Ba'olam ha'elyon hanitzchi galkein meisir. It's impossible for a person not to be involved in this world at all, but when a person is a maskil, when he's a smart person, intelligent person, he knows that he knows that the ultimate life is the one which is above, which is, after this person passes from the world. And when you realize that, we're here fleetingly, that we're just kind of passing through, so to speak, so you don't get too involved in the frivolities of this world, because your focus in life is on the next world. V'amashal bozeh, the mashal that encapsulates this idea. So mishadar bi'ir achas, person is living in a city. V'yodeh she'en dirasa ladur bo eladiras aroi, but he knows that he's only there temporarily. A person, you take a vacation house, for 2 weeks in some vacation spot. You know you're there for a short period of time. So would you spend time furnishing the vacation house with all of the best furnishings? Clearly not. Ritzono machshavto lelechas el ir acheres she'osig lodur ba diras keva. This fellow is only in the vacation spot for a temporary period of time. His ultimate goal is to go to somewhere else permanently. Ein sofek shlo yishtadu liknos from sodos uchrom of lokeim of chevsei bayis. Clearly the guy is only there temporarily. He's not going to buy real estate in that area. He's not going to buy extensive appliances for his home, expensive furniture for the home. Shrayan kavanos l'gbar diras lis yashiv shom. He's not looking to be there long term. Kain hamaskil hayodeh sheyesh orachayim lemala. So too the person who knows that the ultimate orachayim, the ultimate path of life, is lemala, is what the person is going to be involved in for nitzrius, you know, for eternity. Look, you have to take care of yourself on a physical level in this world, but you know he sticks to the bare necessities. He doesn't immerse himself in the pleasures of this world, because he realizes that he's just here on a temporary basis, so to speak. Right? This is reminiscent of so many mishalim that are offered at later points in time. You know, one that comes to mind especially is the famous story with the Chafetz Chaim and Mrs. Golding. Right? The story is often told over without mentioning Mrs. Golding. I guess we're very sonua, you know, so we don't, even when women make their appearance in stories, we edit them out of stories. But the story is told of an American businessman. That's how I've often seen the story told over. It wasn't an American businessman. It was Mrs. Golding, you know, who's a well-known philanthropist here on the Upper West Side in the early parts of the 20th century. Named that for her mother, right? So Anna Golding was the protagonist in the story. She's a well-known philanthropist on the Upper West Side in the early part of the 20th century. She traveled to Europe. She met with the Chafetz Chaim. And she came in to the Chafetz Chaim's little hovel there in Radin, and she said, you know, Rebbe, you know, there's nothing here. There's a table, there's a little a bench that he would stretch out on to go to bed. Rebbe, where's your furniture? So the Chafetz Chaim said back to Mrs. Golding, where's your furniture? She said, Rebbe, I don't live in Radin, I'm just passing through. So he said, I'm also, in this world, I'm also just passing through. If you're just passing through in this world, you don't need that much furniture. So that beautiful response of the Chafetz Chaim is essentially what Rabbeinu B'chaya is saying centuries before. I'm sure the Chafetz Chaim knew the Rabbeinu B'chaya, right? Rabbeinu B'chaya is saying, look, in this world we're passing through Ora Chaim Lamala, right? The ultimate destination of man is above. Right, that's where we're getting off the highway ultimately. So to get, so you know, here in this world we're at a rest stop. We're at a rest stop for a long period of time. But you know, you don't get too caught up in the rest stop. If you're on your way to some exotic vacation place and you stop off in the rest stop and get just too bogged down with what's going on over there, you're losing sight of why you're here. Says the what does this pasuk in Mishlei have to do with Parshas Chayisara? So says the Rabbeinu B'chaye, look, Parshas Chayisara opens up with the death of Sarah and her burial. And the Torah spends an awful lot of time describing that whole procedure. Part of what the Torah wants to impart by describing it is inculcating in us the idea that this is not our ultimate destination in this world, that Sof Aldam Lamus, that ultimately all of us are going to pass on to another world beyond this one. And in that sense, the Rabbeinu B'chaya, a little bit later on in the parsha, makes the following observation. He says, this is at the end of Perek Chav Gimel, Pasuk Chaf, at the end of the whole description of Sarah Imenu's death and her burial, he writes beautifully as follows. B'yeshli Svoneng, the parsha hazos. Contemplate the lesson of this parsha about the death and burial of Sarah. Haromezes ki afim tigdal milus ha'adam, v'hoya ha'olam kula umelo shelo. You could be the greatest person in the world. You could be respected, you could be looked up to, you could be someone who has the world at their fingertips. Ein lo bo elo kivro shel arba amos. But when you leave this world, all you have is the four amos of your keva. You can't take it with you. And he says, Shrei Avram Kalaharis Nitna Lov Matana. Consider Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu had all of Eretz Yisrael given to him as a matana, as a gift by the Ribbono Shel Olam. And yet Avram Avinu had to go and pay money to buy a kever for Sarah and ultimately for himself. What's the lesson for that for us? You can have everything, but still, in the end of the day, what you really have is the kever, is the place where the person is ultimately buried.
Yes, but the thing is, I have a question on this because, first of all, the Torah, like, really, can't think of the right term, really goes and puts a lot of kindness into emphasizing how long Sarah lived and how her years were important and special. That's number one. Number two, Avraham Avinu spent a fortune on the Kever, and he wanted that the Kever to be a family plot. He wanted to establish it as a family plot. So if this world is not important at all, if this Kever is telling us that this world is not important, why do that?
Right, so again, let me just clarify. Ravina B'chai is not saying, I don't think any of the Chachmei HaMasara would suggest that the world is not important, because after all, if the world's not important, why are we here? Right? Is God just kidding? You know,
he's just saying that this Sedra is the one that emphasizes that this world is not important.
Again, not that the world is not important. The world is not our ultimate, right, this world is not our ultimate destination. And hence, as Yaakov puts it, our possessions in this world do not have lasting importance. You know, Avraham Avinu, again, just to use what he says right now, Avraham Avinu is the owner of all of Eretz Yisrael. When it comes down to it, he still has to go and buy the kever, right? In other words, you can't take it with you. That's the idea that Rabbi Bechai is saying is brought out over here. You know, the Torah is marich about the purchase of the burial place for Sarah Imenu, to instill in us this idea that, you know, when you go, that's all you're going to have. You know, that's not to say that life in this world is not worthwhile. Clearly, God put us here for a purpose. We're supposed to use this world to engage in Torah and mitzvahs, but it's all a preparation for the next world. Right? We shouldn't be focused on our acquisitions in this world. Rather, Orach Chaim Lamala, right? The path of life is something which is, you know, ultimately leading to the next world. Right? So he writes this, and then he adds the following. Interestingly enough, when the Jews came into Eretz Yisrael under Yehoshua, the majority of Eretz Yisrael was conquered by battle. Right? They took it by the sword. Nonetheless, there are three places in Eretz Yisrael that have a special sanctity above and beyond the rest of Eretz Yisrael. And these three places, there are three places which were purchased by the Jews. The Elu Hay, Chevron, Vahar Grizin, Vahar Eval, Vahar Amoria. There are three places which play a tremendous role in the life of the Jewish people, and they were all places that were purchased. Chevron Ushakosov Khan Lavram Lamikna. Chevron was purchased by Avram Avinu, or at least part of Chevron, the Maras Machpelah, was purchased by Avram Avinu. Har Grizim v'Har Evo, Shisham Karastu Bris v'Kibalnu Aleinu Hatara Ba'Allah. Har Grizim and Har Evo are incredibly important to us because that's where we made the covenant and accepted upon ourselves the brachos and klolos for following or not following the Torah. And the Torah says that the area of Har Grizim and Har Evo, Shechem, was purchased by Yaakov Avinu. Vayikar Eschelkas Hasoda. Right? And finally, Hiram Moria, the place of the Beis HaMikdash, the Navi tells us, was purchased by David from Aravna Hayavusi. Right? So all three, you know, the Eretz Yisrael was given to us miraculously, but yet the places that are the most sacred in Eretz Yisrael are the ones that we purchased, are the ones that somehow we didn't just rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving to us by the sword, but that we invested of ourselves in purchasing these three areas. The Rebbe Bechai, interestingly enough, does not explain why that's so. He just notes the phenomena. Isn't it interesting that these three places, which are, in a sense, you know, the most significant places in Eretz Yisrael, were not acquired through the sword. They were bought with money, and somehow they're special because of that. Why is that? Why is it that purchasing these areas with money somehow gives them this elevated status, more so than having conquered in a direct fashion? The Rebbe Chaim doesn't explain, but this is somewhat reminiscent of a famous shita of the Rambam that he writes in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, where the Rambam writes that, interestingly enough, the Kedusha, which was invested in Eretz Yisrael by Yehoshua, what the Gemara refers to as Kedusha Rishona. So when Yehoshua invested Eretz Yisrael with Kedusha, so in the words of the Gemara, Kedusha Rishona Kidusha L'Shaita V'lo Kidusha L'Asid Lava. The Kedusha of Yehoshua lasted as long as the Jews were in Eretz Yisrael, but it didn't last thereafter. Whereas the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, which was created by Ezra and the Jews coming back from Babel, the so-called Kedusha Shnia, the second Kedusha, that Kedusha L'Shaita V'Kedusha L'Asid Lava, that Kedusha was permanent. The Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael today, says the Rambam, stems from the Kedusha that was invested in it by Ezra, not by the Kedusha invested by Yehoshua. Why? So the Rambam makes this famous distinction between Kibush and Chiluk. Says the Rambam, Yehoshua conquered Eretz Yisrael. So that which can be won by conquest can be undone by conquest. So when the Babylonians conquered Eretz Yisrael from the Jews, that undid the Kedusha that was invested by Yehoshua. In contrast, Ezra conquered Eretz Yisrael not by force. Right? The Jews came back under Ezra. They were certainly not in a position to forcibly take over Eretz Yisrael. They settled Eretz Yisrael. They had what the Rambam refers to as chazaka. They set up what modern day Israel they call facts on the ground. Right? They moved in. They set up the trailers. I'm sorry.
They had permission of the
Malchus. That's right. But at the same time, they didn't really have that much in terms of sovereignty. Yehoshua, ironically, had more sovereignty. There, they were basically they were colonizing Eretz Yisrael as colonists. You know, they didn't really have an independent government at that time. And yet, what they established through Chazaka was something that the Rambam says can never be undone. Right? So that seems somewhat reminiscent of what the Rabbeinu B'chaye is pointing out over here. That which can be... The Kedusha, which comes about through Kibush, is a lightning conquest, but is not everlasting. The Kedusha that comes about through personal investment, whether it's settling or buying, as the case may be, that has a certain degree of longevity to it, which the Kibush, you know, Kibush is great, then it establishes us as being sovereigns early on, but it has a certain impermanent quality, which we see. The Kedusha that was invested through Kibush is not a Kedusha which is ultimately going to last. Sometimes in life, the things that come about with lightning speed, like the conquest of Eretz Yisrael via Yehoshua, and come about with Nisim v'Niflos, sometimes those don't always last. Sometimes it's the things that come about quietly and with work and investment of time and energy and money. Sometimes it's those areas of Kedusha that last. It's true in Limud HaTorah, right? Sometimes the guy who can pick up a sugya like this loses the sugya like that, right? And it's the guy who works on understanding who ultimately makes the Torah a part of his neshama, right? Right, the first luchas come about with great fanfare and they're broken. The second luchas come about still a hate, and those luchas have a certain permanence to them. Okay, I wanted to see an interesting gematria that the Rabbeinu B'chaye presents. I think it's his own, and the gematria is interesting, but you know the idea behind the gematria is also interesting. At the end of Perichov Gimel Pasuk Aleph, the very first Pasuk in the Sedra. So, the Rabbeinu B'chaye writes, if in the Shevel editions, it's the top of page Reish Beis, page Rav. Od al derech ha-medrash, mei ha-shon ve-esr ha-shon ve-shev ha-shon im dovek im shnei chayei sara. Now, all the Mepharshim ask the Kasha, The pasuk starts out in the beginning of the sedra, "Vayiyu chayei sara." The days of sara were mea shana, v'esrim shana, v'sheva shanim, 100 years and 20 years and 7 years. Famous Rashi as to why he has to break that up. You know, 120 and 7. Okay, we'll leave that kasha for a different time. But then the pasuk concludes, "Shnei chayei sara." These are the years of the life of sara. And that whole phrase, Shnei Chayei Sara, is seemingly extraneous. Yeah, we know that these are Shnei Chayei Sara. It says in the beginning of the pasuk, Vayiyu Chayei Sara. These were the years of Sara's life. So why do you have to conclude Shnei Chayei Sara? It's a totally extraneous phrase. Because the Medrash is follows. Minyan Vayiyu Lamed Zayin. The gematria of the word Vayiyu, Vayiyu Chayei Sara, is 37. What's the significance of that? Kimiyom shnolad Yitzchak ad yom ha'akedo lamed zayin shana hayu. Right, again, traditionally we know that Yitzchak Avinu was 37 at the time of the Akedah, and Sara Imenu died immediately after the Akedah, after hearing the terrible news of the Akedah. Right, so Yitzchak Avinu at the time of Sara's death was 37 years old. Behem hayu ikar chayeha shel Sara. Here's such a beautiful thought. The main years, the most beautiful years, the golden years of Sara Imenu's life, were the last 37 years of her life where she had a child. Kikodem lochem lohaya lobein. For the first 90 years of her life, she was childless. Umishain lobanim choshuv kemes. And Chazal say that if you have no children, considered as if you're dead. V'lachach yomar v'yiyu chayei sara ki ikar achayim shelo kemispar v'yiyu. That's pshat in the first phrase in the pasuk. V'yiyu chayei sara. The chayei sara, the true chiyus of sara, was the 37 last years of her life where she had a child. It's an unbelievable hashkofa, by the way, besides the gematria. Basically, Rabbeinu B'chai is saying sara started to live when she had Yitzchak. Everything that happened up till then in Sara Imenu's life was nice, was good, but Sara started to live for real when she had a child, when she had Yitzchak. The truth is, this is not really relevant directly to anyone here, but this is a tremendous chizuk to young mothers. Because very often young mothers struggle with the following issue, you know. Again, it's not true of all young mothers, but a lot of young mothers, you know, feel that when they have a child, they're giving something up, right? They might have been involved in a lot of social activities before they had the child. They might have been involved in some, you know, certain professional activities, and now they have a child, and all of a sudden they're running around, they're changing diapers, you know, they're nursing the baby. You have a little child, you have no life other than the baby. That's true, right? And sometimes these young mothers might feel, or even older mothers, they might feel that they're giving up life in order to have the child. Comes this pasuk of the Torah and says, no, vayiyu chayei sara, the chayei sara, the ikar chiyus of sara, with the 37 years with Yitzchak, right, when she was a mother. Now, before she was a mother, she was a kiruv professional extraordinaire, right? Sara megayeres hanashim, she's running around, you know, being Megayah people. She has the unbelievable, the ultimate Shabbos table. Her Shalant, you know, they talked about for miles around, right? And again, we don't know the full extent of her activities, but, you know, she obviously had a tremendous hashpah. And then what happened? She gives birth to Yitzchak, and she nurses Yitzchak for 2 years, and I'm sure she dropped out of the public eye, you know, once she was doing all of that. She was tolerant with taking care of Yitzchak. Did she give up her life, you know, in order to take care of Yitzchak? No, so the pasuk vayiyu chayei sara. The ikar chayei sara was when she was a mother. And, you know, in a sense, all of her extraordinary activities before she was a mother were great, but she only began to live once she was a mother. A tremendous musar, tremendous hashkafa that's contained in that.
Maybe this is like a right to the, it's different why she died, but this seems very well with the idea that when she heard that,
you know, right, because right, it fits in beautifully, right? Her whole life is Yitzchak, and the notion that Yitzchak might have died, even in a in a Kiddush Hashem dika manner, right, is so devastating to her because her whole life is Yitzchak, and that's why again Chazal say Parcha Nishmasa, right, that she expired upon hearing the news that Yitzchak Avinu potentially, you know, had been slaughtered at the Akedah.
I'm not sure if you're talking psychologically or in terms of mitzvah living. Obviously, she's seeing entire people that she should be nostalgic for Shekhinah.
Right.
You cannot say that that wasn't her life. So,
right.
I understand what you're saying psychologically.
Right.
But certainly, having a child that doesn't come close to being nostalgic for Shekhinah.
Right.
Having
right.
a child that you're raising and helping you establish clientele, I understand.
Right. So, I'm not sure in what sense the Rabbeinu B'chaye means it. I think he definitely means it on a psychological level. You know, Misha ain lo bonim chashuv kameis. You know, so what does that mean? You know, so I, at the very least, it means something psychological, I think. He may mean it in a substantive sense also. In other words, you know, sorry, Meno and Yitzchok is somewhat unique because, again, as you point out, she's building the future of Klal Yisrael in a very real sense by raising Yitzchak. But at the same time, I think there is an element of chizuk to any mother who should realize that she's doing her part in building Klal Yisrael by raising a child. And, you know, in a sense, that's the ikar chizuk, and perhaps even more so than some of the other activities that she might have been involved in outside of her capacity as a mother. I'm not sure what he's saying. I think at the very least he's making a psychological point, but it could be that he's making more substantive points as well.
Once his son, she could have gone back to her old once she thought that what she heard about it,
right.
She could have been working on it.
Right, she could have gone back to the Kiruv and all of that. Right, but now on a certain level, I guess, you know, once she feels that, you know, she's no longer a mother, it's diminishing to her. Right. So there are all these elements there, and again, not to discount any of them, but again, the Rabbeinu B'chaye is saying, at the very least on a psychological level, she felt that her life was complete through motherhood. You know, motherhood gave her this sense of completion. That which she, with all of her incredible activities, until she became a mother, she didn't feel that sense of completion. Yeah.
This idea of how much greater the Zoyan for our mom to take Yitzchak to the Akedah,
because
Shlomo Avinu was very well aware what Yitzchak meant to
Sarah.
Despite the fact that he knew that he might be putting Sarah's life in jeopardy,
it heightens his desire as well, 100%. Let's take another. He's not done yet with the Gematrias. He's up there. So that's what it means at the end of the pasuk, Shnei Chayei Sarah, meaning Vayihiyu Chayei Sarah, the Iker Chiyus of Sarah was 37 years. However, if you want to know how long she lived, so then Me'a Shana Ve'esrim Shana Ve'sheva Shanim Shnei Chayei Sarah, the actual longevity of Sarah was 127 years. So in other words, the pasuk is not repetitive. Vayihiyu Chayei Sarah. She was alive in the true sense of the word for 37 years, but she happened to have lived. You know, you want to see what they put on the death certificate. She was alive for 127 years. Right? That's his pshat. He said similarly. Kayosebo. I'll give you another similar gematria. He says again, beautiful gematria. Vayichi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. Right? Yaakov lived in Eretz Mitzrayim, right, for 17 years. So what's the gematria of Vayichi? So it's up there. Yud Zayin Shana Kishapir Yosef Mimenu, right? They were 17 years that Yaakov enjoyed with Yosef before Yosef was taken away. Yosef was, of course, sold into slavery at the age of 17. The Yud Zayin Shana B'Mitzrayim, and there were another 17 years at the end of Yaakov's life where he was reconciled with Yosef, right? 17 years from the time that he came down to Mitzrayim till he passed away. So in other words, Harei Shloshim V'Arba. So how many years did Yaakov spend with his favorite son Yosef? 34. Minyan Vayichi. What's the gematria of Vayichi? 34. In other words, Vayichi Yaakov. What was the chiyus of Yaakov? What were the years where he was really alive? The 34 years that he was zocha to share with Yosef HaTzadik. Ki hem hayu ikar chayiv shel Yaakov, because his life was about his child, his heir, the one to whom he taught his Torah. I'm sorry?
Right.
So in other words, there are 34 years that he was together with Yosef. Those 34 years were his life. The rest of it was Tzaras. But the Chiyus of Yaakov Avinu, that's the Vayichi, the gematria of 34, the time that he spent with Yosef.
The
Netziv, the Netziv actually from last year, the Netziv writes that by Yaakov Eretz Mitzrayim, the only time that he was really alive was that last 17 years that he was in Mitzrayim. The Rebbe B'chai is saying something similar, but not the same. The Rebbe B'chai is saying, you know, not just the last 17 years when he was in Mitzrayim. The 17 years, the first 17 years of Yosef's life were joy for Yaakov Avinu. The truth is, if you look at the events in the life of Yaakov Avinu, Yosef is born, that's when he leaves the house of Lavan, makes his way back to Eretz Yisrael. And again, I'm not going to say that nothing terrible happened during those 17 years. The Maisa Udina happened during those 17 years, right? But by and large, the 17 years that he spent with Yosef were years of happiness. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Megurei Aviv, right? Yaakov dwelled b'shalva be'eretz Megurei Aviv. Right? Again, Chazal famously say, Vikesh Yaakov leishev b'shalva. Ashe kafsal avrogso shel Yosef. But when was kafsal avrogso shel Yosef? When he was 17. For the first 17 years of Yaakov Avinu's life, of Yosef's life. So Yaakov was pretty happy. But six of the end were in Laban's house. Right? Elchinam. Right. So, but he was accumulating a lot of sheep during that period of time. Right? So, you know. He argues with the Rabbeinu B'chai. It's okay, right? It's not mishubah to agree with everything the Rabbeinu B'chai says, right? But again, so but that's Rabbeinu B'chai says by Yechi Yaakov, you know, 34 years of chiyus, because when you have that favorite son, that gives him the chiyus which he wouldn't have under different circumstances. Right, so that's stamakasha. It's a good kasha, I don't mean to dismiss it, but stamakasha that you have on the whole story, right? But again, whatever the milus and chesronus of having a favorite son were, the fact that they connected on this level was a tremendous source of pride and happiness for Yaakov.
You say the last 17 years all this wasn't together again, but the fact that he had Yosef back versus the other 11.
Right. Right. Okay, so if you want, you could say it that way. I don't know that goes against Rabbeinu B'chai. I mean, there were 34 years where Yaakov Avinu had all of his children together. Right? If you want to say it like that, you know, so... he's somewhat oblique, you know, so it could be that that's what he means as well. In other words, not that could be had Yosef, but you know, having all the children together was a source of great nachas for him. Rabbeinu B'chai, again, we know that the parasha is basically divided into two halves. First half dealing with death, the second half dealing with marriage. We won't attempt to darshan, you know, anything having to do with that connection. But if one looks at the second half of the parsha, the marriage part of the parsha, so what's that? Like I said, I'm not darshaning. You can darshan. I'm not going to darshan. But if one looks at the second half of the parsha, that which deals with marriage, Rabbeinu B'chai mentions an interesting minhag that was prevalent in his day, which I don't know if anyone still does, but was prevalent in his day. If you look in Perek Chav Dalet Pasuk Gimel, so Avraham Avinu, of course, makes Eliezer swear that, you know, he can't take a wife for Yitzchak Mibnos HaKna'ani, from the Canaanite girls, because after all, they were cursed. And he says, you know, making sure you choose the right wife is a very, very important thing. If a woman is a bad woman, you know, she's a woman who is not interested in doing the right thing, she will sway her husband to her side. That goes back all the way to Chava in Gan Eden. right? Chava had a plan, and Adam Arishon was schlepped along, right? If the woman wants to go in a certain direction, so she's going to drag her husband with her. Consider Shlomo HaMelech, right? Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of men, but his wives moved him in a very different direction. Again, the wife has a tremendous koach that she holds over her husband. And then he writes, V'alkein hukba b'Yisrael minog likro parsha zo l'chasam b'yom chasunosa. The Jewish people all have the custom to lame this parsha for a chasam on the day of his chasunah. Now, what minog is that already? That is not, certainly not our minog. Right? So Rabbi Shavel references the Abudraham. The Abudraham, again, is also a Spanish Rishon, talks about Alderman Hagim that pertain to tefillah and the like. And the Abudraham writes that on the Shabbos Sheva Brachas of a Chasson, they would lay not only the regular Parshas HaShavua, but they would then add in some kind of hosafa into the laning to lay this parsha about how Eliezer went out and found Rivka Imenu as a wife for Yitzchak Avinu. And the Avudraham writes that this minog of laning this parsha goes back to Reb Sadyako. Right, so again, this is a minog that we don't follow. I don't know if anybody follows it today. I don't know if the Sfardim follow it today, some Sfardim. But apparently there was a widespread minog to the point where Rebbe B'chai talks about this minog like it was a davar pashut, like everybody was doing this, that they would lay on the Shabbos the Sheva Brachos for a chasam, Parshas Chayisara, to talk about the idea of marriage. And why do they talk about the idea of marriage? Bahaskir ha'am shi'izar bin Asuaf, to remind people to be careful about whom they marry. Mishloika isha l'shem yofi, that he shouldn't marry a woman just because she's beautiful. V'lo l'shem mamon, you shouldn't marry a woman just because she has money. This is one which, both of these, unfortunately, you know, the more things change, the more things stay the same. And not just, you know, among people who are not so strict in Torah mitzvahs, because sometimes in circles of people are very strict about Torah mitzvahs. One of the first things people want to know about a shidduch, what does she look like? And what does the father do for a living? And, you know, how much money can they bring into the shidduch? Rabbi Bechai writes, you don't marry for looks, you don't marry for money. Because money has a tendency to fly away rather quickly. Below the shame sroras hakrovim, you shouldn't marry for status. You know, that, you know, oh, do you know who my brother-in-law, father-in-law, do you know who these people are? Avo yitzarech shetia kavanoso l'shem shamayim. Right? You want to get married l'shem shamayim, i.e. to look for the midos that the woman you're going to marry possesses, to have in mind that you're going to pass on these midos onto your children. And indeed, the Drasha Saran writes, you know, why was Avraham Avinu so bent on sending out Eliezer to Haran to find a wife for Yitzchak? His relatives in Haran were of the Avodah Zarah. They weren't exactly, you know, the firmest people on many levels. So says the Rosh Hashanah, that's true. They were of the Avodah Zarah. They had terrible hashkafas, but they had midos. And at the end of the day, you know, when you want to create a marriage, which is an everlasting marriage, a good marriage, the key ingredient to a good marriage is midos tovos.
Saying that the fact that he went to Haran rather than Yichus could have something to be because
right, so Yichus is important to the extent to which Yichus is a barometer of Midos. Right, in other words, she comes from a good family, so in other words, Mistama shall pass on these Midos to the rest of the
family. Why does the Torah still the beauty of
that important? She's trying to say that it's of no importance. So why is the Torah praising Zara and Rivka here? Right. So it could be in context with Rivka. Consider the rest of the pasuk. She was Yifas Mara Ma'od Besula Veishlo Yada'a.
So in other words, despite the fact that she was pretty,
She has still never taken up with anybody. Right? Okay. You know, look, not all the Midrashim agree that she was three, right? But even so, in other words, that could be in context. In other words, if she hadn't taken up with anybody and she was ugly, okay, that's not my love, right? But if she, you know, if she was pretty and she didn't take up with anybody, you know, that's stressing, you know, her chastity, you know, and right?
Transition
time says
that they
used
to dance in the fields.
Right. No, so there, don't look at Yofi, right? No, look at Midas HaGunos.
Now the ugly women would say no.
Right.
Right.
The
pretty women would say no.
To right. So again, it could just be on the, you know, whatever you have, you know, you should try to, you know, to use as a, you know, as an enticement to try to, you know, if you have something, might as well make use of it. But a bit of a chai, I think, is saying, you know, ultimately, it's not the yofi which you should be looking for, you know, although it's undeniable that people will be looking for yofi, you know, in the process of marriage.
So, if this would be applied, not really, what you want to apply, you would sit down with this young man and young woman who's ready to go out. Time when he's starting to go out, here in this case, you know,
right,
the day of the wedding, it may be something very special. And as you go into the marriage, and something comes up, and you say, "Wow, you know, she really is so beautiful that she really has some." So that you have that parsha.
Right. It's interesting to comment because, again, especially according to the Avud Raham's version of this, they laned this during the week of Sheva Brachas. So Lechora, according to Rabbi Bechaya, that this is meant to instill in the chassan all these hashkafas about whom he should marry, it's a little bit late in the game at that point, right? Shabbos Sheva Brachas, right? So again, as Shlomo Zalman suggests, perhaps, look, you know, hopefully the chassan made the right choice going in, but sometimes you need to be reminded, even once the marriage is underway, you know, what you were looking for, because sometimes as the marriage gets underway, you know, like many things in this world, you go in l'shem shamayim, but can lose sight of what those values were that you went in with, and you know, perhaps the chassan needs a reminder once married life is underway, you know, what his ikar values should be all about.
Okay, see, this might be the record that this famous saying, it says, and it told me, if you marry for face or figure, you'll end up facing what are you figure.
Uh-huh. Okay.
The Sheva Brachas would be a good time because if we did have the Salah, or it should be a wife after Scott Vasulin is a husband of Scott Vasulin, Nida, so he's not having any physicality with her, and he's seeing that she's separated from him, and he respects it for them, so she's in your Shemayim, and they're reading the Parsha.
Right. It's a very valid point. I want to just share one more passage from the Ritu B'chaye. This is Perek Chav Dalet, Pasuk Chav Beis, in describing the various gifts which Eliezer gives to Rivka. It says, "Vayikach ish nezem zahav beka mishkalo ushnei tzmidim al yadeho asara zahav mishkalom." He took a golden ring, which was a beka in terms of its weight, a certain weight, and two bracelets, and they weighed 10 talents of gold. So, Ma'ayot Sarach Lahodiyenu HaMishka. Yes, Rabbeinu Bechaye, why is it so important to tell us exactly how much it weighed? You know, both of these things. El Val Ramaz Lechav Matono Sa'ilo She'osiv L'Avseis Mera Am Mekablei HaTorah She'yoviu Shkolim She'kosiv Lehem Bekel HaGulgolis. This is hinting at us that the nation which will emerge from Rivka is going to be a nation which is going to bring the Maxis HaShekel. And about the Maxis HaShekel, it says, Beka LaGugolis. Each person is going to bring a Beka. Shikavu Shnei Luchos Sabri Shnei Maseres HaDibros. And the two bracelets, which are 10 talents of gold in their weight, hints at the Aseres HaDibros, which are contained within the Shnei Luchos Sabris. V'yesh b'chlolom chuf ayin beis tevos. And the Aseres HaDibros contain 172 words. And of course, 172 is the gematria of Beka. Right? Beka, you know, Nezem Zahav, Beka, Mishkalo. So all of these things hint at later events in the life of the Jewish people. Right now, this is a medrash which is quoted by Rashi on Chumash as well, and the Targum as well quotes this idea that he's been being meramis to the Aseres Adibros and the Machzis Hashekel. But the Rebbe Bachai takes this idea that the gifts of Eliezer are meramis to later things in the life of the Jewish people, and he brings it even a little bit further. He says, "V'nei kol ha-me'oros ha'ilu l'rivka kol simin l'boneho." We know the Ramban famously told us that Maisa Ovo simin l'abonim, that the occurrences in Sefer Bereishis in particular foreshadow what's going to happen to the Jewish people later in time. That's true here as well. What happens to Rivka, Maisa Imahos simin l'abonim, what happens to Rivka in this whole parsha symbolizes the future fate of the Jewish people. He says as follows: Hamikrim shiru lo eved baslachas haderach dugmas hamikrim shiru lo boneh baderach hamidbar. The eved Eliezer, who travels miraculously and finds Rivka, that hints at the later miraculous success the Jewish people is going to experience when traveling through the midbar. Kishem shoy malachim baderach mikach tfilaso shel Avraham Avinu shenemar. Sha'amar yishlach malach lefanecha, Avraham Avinu davened that a malach should go out before Eliezer and be matzliach as darko, should bring him on the proper way. So too, a malach kach matzino boneh b'derech hamidbar, hinei anochi shleach malach lefanecha. The malach accompanied the Jewish people as they went through the midbar. U'kishem sha'alu amayim l'krosso, just as Chazal tell us that when Rivka came to the well, the water miraculously rose up to greet her. Came bonel b'derech hamidbar. That happened in the midbar as well. Ali be'er enulo, that the waters of the be'er rose up to the Jewish people. For eved shenasim lo amatonos ha'ele, when the eved Eliezer gave these gifts to Rivka, ramaz lo bohen, he hinted to her, ki kishen shekiblo hi amatonos ha'ele ha'idei eved, came bonel asidim l'kabel ha'idei Moshe eved Hashem. The Jewish people are also going to get matanos from an Eved. Who's the Eved? Moshe Rabbeinu. It's the Eved Hashem, the servant of God, who's going to bestow dafka the Aseres HaDibros and the Torah upon the Jewish people. U'kishem shenosan la'matanos rabos v'ksos m'derech v'ksos b'bayis. Look at what happened with Rivka Imenu. Eliezer gives her some gifts out in the field by the well, and then certain gifts he waits to give her once they're back home at Besuel's house. So too, the Jewish people received certain gifts, the Aseres HaDibros, in the midbar. And so too, when the Jewish people came close to Eretz Yisrael, they got even more mitzvos, meaning the beautiful gifts of the mitzvos were given to the Jewish people piecemeal. They were given some at Har Sinai, but then some later in the Arvos Moav. And he quotes the Maimer Chazal from Gittin, Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna. According to one opinion, the Gemara in Gittin, the Torah was given in separate scrolls gradually to the Jewish people throughout the time that they were in the Midbar. In other words, it was given in installments, so to speak, and put together at the end of the 40 years. That piecemeal giving of the Torah is hinted at in the way in which Eliezer gives the gifts to Rivka gradually. U'kashem shenichpala parsha zobin yon eved shtei pa'amim. Mepharshim asked, you know, the whole story with Eliezer and Rivka is essentially told over twice in the Torah. First, it's told as it happens, and then Eliezer, in painstaking detail, recounts the whole thing. Why repeat it? So he says, "Kain bonel kiblu haTorah luchos rishonos luchos shnius." That hints at the idea that the Torah was given; the luchos were given twice. U'Moshe Eved Hashem b'mishne Torah chazer l'saper be'ir ayarden kol dvarim shiulah and beluchos rishonos. And again, as Reb David says, Sefer Dvarim, in many ways is a review of the earlier parts of Chumash. The notion that Torah itself is reviewed is hinted at the review that takes place here in the center itself.
Nirmas kol zeh b'shluchos ha'eved l'mailos ha'avos.
everything that's described over here in the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka ultimately hints at the later giving of the Torah to the Jewish people. Now, this is beautiful. It's also a little bit strange. So why Dafka here? Would all these things hint at the giving of the Torah to the Jewish people? I think the answer is very simple. The giving of the Torah to Klal Yisrael, as Chazal say in so many places, is a marriage. So that parsha in Chumash, which describes marriage at length, is not just about a marriage of two human beings, of Yitzchak and Rivka, exalted though they are. Ultimately, the second half of Parshas Chayisara is supposed to teach us about the ultimate marriage, the marriage of Klal Yisrael with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's all symbolic of that marriage. And in a sense, again, we said before, you know, the Seder really is subdivided into two parts, death and marriage, right? Each of these divisions teaches us something that goes far beyond the story in the Chumash itself, according to Rabbeinu Bechaye. The first half of the Sedra, when it talks about death, is teaching us about how we need to keep our eye on the ball and focused on eternal life. And the second half of the Sedra that talks about marriage, besides teaching us all of the things we're supposed to be looking for in an earthly marriage, are also reminding us that our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, in a sense, a marriage between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, between us and Hashem, and we need to view it in that way to be able to fully appreciate it.
Rav started out this year with Rabbeinu Bechaye. Did Rav say that Rabbeinu Bechaye was a Talmud of Ramban?
It was a Talmud of the Rashba, but it ultimately drew much from the Ramban.
Oh, so the Ramban's Yisoid was Maisel and Simul Bonham.
Right.
Clearly.
I mean, this idea.
Right.
He's going one step further. Maisa Imos Simul Abonim, as we see. Right. And he's just going further with it. Okay. Wish everybody a good Shabbos, and we'll pick off Bez Hashem next week.